Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week, we're taking a deep breath after covering some of the very most current of current events and talking about a nice evergreen topic, the kind of thing you can talk about anytime. Plus, we'll test ourselves vigorously with a spirited quiz. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Want a show that will really take you somewhere? Check out a preview of NPR's newest podcast, Embedded. The show chooses a story from the news and goes deep. Learn what it's like to be in the middle of El Salvador's gang war, or a biker in a Texas shootout, or a woman in the dude-heavy world of late-night comedy writing. Find Embedded now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
We've got all kinds of entertainment on the docket this week, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And who's in the fourth chair this week? Let me check my notes. Let me see. I must check my... Who is this? Trey Graham.
Trey Graham!
What?
Hey, guys. I'm Trey Graham, and I do nothing at NPR.
So those of you who are old school Pop Culture Happy Hour fans will know that Trey is an original founding member of our panel until he went off to chase rainbows, as he said at the time.
We sent Trey to live with a nice farm family.
Mm-hmm. We sent Trey to live with a nice farm family. What do you want to tell the people about your journey since then, buddy?
So those of you who actually are old school listeners and who maybe follow us all on Twitter have probably caught on by now that about 2 years ago, I had ye old fashioned midlife crisis.
Yep.
Took some time off, got really, really drunk, and then took care of myself and got better. And
That's right. And
went to rehab, and now I'm back.
That's right. Cool. Trey has done some lovely writing about this that mm-hmm. that he was kind enough to share. And we are so happy to be putting you in that fourth chair, buddy.
Well, thank you.
The original owner of the Trey Graham fourth chair. Mm-hmm. So, look, you know, we went to Batman v. Superman, mm-hmm. The Strange Case of Batman v. Superman. We've done some current TV shows. We've done some other stuff. This week, we're doing what we call evergreens. I don't know to what degree that is an accepted and understood term, but it basically just means it's not any particular thing from this week. We're just doing some fun stuff.
Scavenging in our brains.
That we have queued up. So the evergreen topic we're going to do is best bad movie. So Stephen Thompson, best bad movie.
So my movie is a little film from 1991 called Cool as Ice.
Sure.
Starring Mr. Vanilla Ice.
Oh, Mr. Vanilla Ice.
Mr. Vanilla Ice to you.
He gets the honorific these days.
He's graduated until he gets honorary doctorates and we start having to call him Dr. Vanilla Ice.
His middle name is Bean, by the way.
That's right. People of a certain age will know this as somewhat of a cult classic. Classic bad movie, I think. But there are people who are a little younger who might uh-huh. not have seen Cool as Ice in the theater as I did, or as my friends did when they were the only people in the theater and during the dance numbers would get up and actually dance in front of the movie screen. Which is
You had ironic comedy friends.
Yes. I did in the early 90s uh-huh. have ironic comedy friends. Uh-huh. That is for certain. Uh-huh. Cool as Ice, if you have never seen it, stars Vanilla Ice as part of a gang of motorbike riding good-hearted, but I wouldn't say
toughs.
They're not ne'er-do-wells. They're toughs.
They're toughs.
They go from town to town, blessing the various hamlets of America with their hippity-hoppity music. They're sort of several original songs recorded for this movie. It was made about 25 years ago. But it looks like it could have been made 75 years ago on another planet. It is a completely bizarre... Like, it is really hard to envision a world in which anyone thought that this movie should be made, even I think at the height of Vanilla Ice's power.
Rain? Were you going to say Rain?
It was Rain. His brief supernova mm-hmm. success. So basically, one of his group's motorbikes breaks down, and so they're stranded in a small town. He meets a girl. Her dad doesn't approve. Dad is played by Michael Gross from TV's Family Ties.
Sure.
Okay. And there are several really, really, really bad musical numbers, and a script that is so... It is awful, but it I think this is an important thing that makes a favorite bad movie. It is quotably bad.
Yeah, that's important.
Everybody who knows this movie knows that at one point Vanilla Ice says to the woman played by Kristen Minter, drop that zero and get with the hero. Because, of course, she has a douchey boyfriend.
Sure.
Yeah, that would work on me, man.
It would. Also, her name is Kathy, and when he meets her, he kind of nods, and kind of the slack-jawed nod. He kind of looks at her and goes, Kathy. And then he waits a beat. Cat.
Oh boy!
Because that's where a line of dialogue should go. At one point, he finds her address book and says, and I quote, "Looky, looky, looky at Cat's black bookie."
Wow!
Wow! I have so many questions about this movie.
Like, would you like? First... Can I come over and see it? Right. Can I watch it with you and
first.
Your family?
Second is, do Vanilla Ice and his gang at any point run into a heroic gang of gymnasts?
I was going to say, this is calling to mind certain elements of the great gymnastics film.
The gymnastics action
film. Well, now, Linda, you're confused. It's not a gymnastics film. It's gymnastics skills. Karate Kids.
That's right.
That's where you're confused.
That's right.
We are dipping into very old school
pop culture happy hour. We do have a very old episode that I promised to dig up and link to where we talked about Gymkhana.
Anyway, Cool as Ice is the Gymkhana of 1991.
Sure.
Nice.
That's amazing.
It is the word masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I thought you were going in a whole different master direction there.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it. Come over to my house and watch it with me.
Nice. I will do that. I will do that. You are on, buddy. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, best bad movie, favorite bad movie.
Jessica Reedy hit me one time.
And my fate is sealed. I've lost the Omega Hedron. I must be sent to the Phantom Zone. Your suffering will be short. Mine, forever.
That is the great Peter O'Toole in the terrible 1984 film Supergirl.
There is a section.
You got a one-track mind, buddy.
I was going
to
say, we are all staying in our lane.
I mean, I could have gone Plan 9 from Outer Space. I had
sure.
Gymkhana written down here, sure. But that's we've covered that ground.
We have.
In like 2010.
In this film, and I'm getting a migraine just at the thought of trying to explain it, but he plays Zaltar, who is Argo City's resident artist. Argo City is a chunk of Krypton that got away from it before the destruction and
sure.
is now floating in inner space, don't ask, encased in some kind of membrane, never mind.
Yeah.
And he is the artist using what's called a matter wand, which is basically an orange glow stick, and the Omega Hedron, as he calls it, as everybody else calls it, the Omega Hedron, which is this basically a Christmas ornament that spins in his hand. It's the power source for Argo City.
Uh-huh.
And he constructs a statue of a dragonfly that... shoots out and pierces the membrane around Argo City, and that causes the Omega Hedron to fly through, so somebody needs to go and rescue it.
I was going to say, he sounded like he'd lost it.
He had lost it.
In the clip right there.
The script says that he has built a ship out of gravitational radiation that will go through the binary chute that connects inner space to outer space, but he doesn't want to bother saying that, so I think at one point they ask him what he's going to do, and he says, I'm going to go with that through there, because he doesn't want to be bothered with this script. He is too... tired. He has throughout this film, he has the look of a man awaiting cocktail hour. Just a faraway glance. And the sweater he's wearing, let's talk about the sweater he's wearing. It is like 10% Cosby, 10% Chess King, 80% the wrapping on your Hanukkah gift. Just blue
sure.
and yellow and gold. And that's only half of this amazing thing. At one point, Supergirl meets him in the Phantom Zone, where he's now wearing a caftan. Never mind.
Right.
And he's got this atomizer where he keeps squirting into his mouth. It's some kind of intoxicating substance. And this is how this
Knowing
movie...
Knowing Peter O'Toole in that decade, it probably was.
Probably was. So he keeps squirting it into his mouth, and then he offers it to her. And he says the second worst line in this very dumb movie, which is...
Squirt.
She refuses... He takes it back and says the dumbest line in this terrible movie,
squirt.
And he squirts. We haven't even touched Faye Dunaway and Brenda Vaccaro yet.
Yep.
Jessica Reedy?
You have no friends, Selena. You treat everyone as if they were put on this earth to serve you. More or less, I think they were. You included. Power of shadow, appear!
All Okay, and then this big demon thing appears. Now, more or less, I think they were, is not really a stirring kind of villain piece. It's like, yes, possibly, in a sense, I suppose
it's not
they were.
Exactly Neil before Zod.
This is concentrated 1984, like the wigs, the shoulder pads, the presence of Hart Bachner. everything about this says 1984. And the thing she says after Power of Shadow appear is Power of Shadow. And just like this, I'm doing the line reading. Destroy her. That. I love this movie deeply. It's got
it
Helen Slater.
Like
she's plucky. Sure. She's great. She's great in it. And it's just so dumb. That's 1984's Supergirl.
Love it. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Trey Graham.
Well, I'm glad that we did get to the superhero genre because I've kind of wanted to nominate the 1980s Flash Gordon as a sort
sure.
of
sure.
bad movie classic. That is absolutely worth checking out.
Because it's not boring. That's the
it's not boring.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it is a fine, fine piece of terrible filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
That is not, however, my choice.
Okay. Oh, goodness.
I feel like we cannot go through this process without mentioning at least Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, right. Sure.
Because,
gonna,
oh, my goodness.
Cool.
I'm gonna
oh, my goodness. The design and Eddie Redmayne in just, you
Eddie
know,
Redmayne
in
alone.
Every yeah. drag queen's fantasy getup.
Right. Yeah.
Ruling a universe of his own.
I got
right?
you.
But my favorite best bad movie, of course, touches on something that is near and dear to my heart, which is the performing arts. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the inimitable Meryl Streep singing a little ditty called I See Me.
I see me.
This is, of course, from the extended and lavish opening sequence to Death Becomes Her, in which the fated star, played by Meryl Streep, is in a Broadway musical version of Sweet Bird of Youth.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, out of the box, mm-hmm. you have right. the worst idea in the history of theater right. making. This is, of course, a fake show mm-hmm. that they've invented for the movie. Sweet Bird of Youth is a Tennessee Williams play about venereal disease and forced sterilization,
right.
if I
yes.
remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
So musicalizing that and having Meryl Streep sing this up-tempo number with a chorus of bellboys
right.
makes no sense, considering that it is very specifically a tragedy about the punishment of sexual transgression.
Mm. Right.
Right.
Is that her voice?
That is her voice.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This movie contains so very many pleasures. Sidney Pollack in an uncredited cameo as an emergency room doctor. Goldie Hawn with a gigantic hole through the middle of her body.
Yes.
Bruce Willis in
uh-huh.
some really terrifying, uglifying, and aging makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And Isabella Rossellini swanning around in mm-hmm. little more than a necklace with Fabio as her bodyguard.
Oh, nice.
I remember this movie. I saw it when it came out, but that's like 25 years ago. Wasn't
Good
it? It's satire, isn't
it? It is satire, but it's really more of a black comedy. This is from Robert Zemeckis.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
After Back to the Future, but before Forrest Gump.
That's a good pick.
Thank
I
you.
I like that pick.
I think what all these have in common, none of these movies are boring.
Right. I think that's fair. Now, when I went to pick mine, I figured one way to go was like things that I literally know from Mystery Science Theater, right?
Right.
You got your Cave Dwellers, which is like a Conan ripoff, Conan the Barbarian, not Conan O'Brien,
mm-hmm.
where eventually the guy is like in a hang glider.
Sure.
And he's got these like little cutoff pants and he's in a hang glider and there's a scientist. It's very complicated. Or you could go with something that everybody tends to think is really good that I thought was dumb, like American Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And another, which is also, I think, aged poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But I ultimately went with Twister.
Sure.
Which is really bad, but in a way, really fun. Now, Twister...
I have to admit, I had completely forgotten that there was a movie about a tornado called Twister.
Yeah.
I was picturing a movie based on the game.
Right. Mm. So, Twister... I bet you were. So,
I would watch that movie.
So, I bet you would. So, Twister involves Bill Paxton, not Bill Pullman,
right.
but Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt as they're like tornado-watching scientists, but they're divorced, they're broken up. And they've gone off and they have separate like tornado chasing watching units, I think,
right.
sort of. And there's a whole thing where there's a machine that one of them has built him, I think,
mm-hmm.
that it looks like a little trash can. And the idea is that you get it to the middle of the tornado and then you throw it up into the, and it goes up into the tornado and then it has a bunch of little ping pong balls with sensors and they all get whipped around by the tornado and you get all this data. That's how it's yep. supposed to work. So the whole movie is essentially him and his new girlfriend, played by poor Jamie Gertz, who, you know, things were kind of slowing down for her in terms of movie work, I think. She has nothing to do. She's kind of like the poor, hapless girlfriend who you know is ultimately going to lose Bill Paxton to Helen Hunt.
Fortunately, Bill Pullman is available.
There is a very young Philip Seymour Hoffman.
In the Jack Black role.
In the Jack Black role, playing kind of the like, dude, like the dude member of the team. And then the great thing about it is this ending where they wind up surviving a tornado by holding on to something, which is not how you survive a tornado. I'm just going to tell you right now, you can't just hold on to something. And there are moments of wit in Twister, the famous one being the moment in which she looks at the cow flying by the truck and says, cow. It's funny. That's a dry moment. But for the most part, Twister is really bad, but really fun. It is really dopey. But again, I would say, as Stephen said, not boring.
No.
And eventually, I got to tell you, they get such good data.
So much data
from the ping pong balls.
I do enjoy the fact that you have to have like a rival team of weather experts. The villain can't just be the tornado.
Oh yeah, no, the villain is actually Cary Elwes, who plays a different, an evil tornado chaser.
It's F5.
Yeah, he's the bad.
He sells out to the tornado.
He's the bad one.
He sells out to Big Tornado.
That's right. He sells out to Big Tornado. All right, so those are all some of our favorite bad movies. Please bring us your favorite bad movies at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us. At PCHH. You guys did great, by the way, last week with the favorite pop culture object. We got some great answers.
I should have said TARDIS. You're right.
Yeah, my favorite one of which was the person who wants the portrait of Victor Newman that hangs in Victor Newman's office in Young and the Restless. I knew you would appreciate that.
I realized that what I really should have asked for is the poster of April Ludgate holding the severed heads of the
Black-Eyed
Peas,
which
I've looked for like on Etsy.
That is good. All right. When we come back, we are going to take a quiz. Glenn is giving it. I don't even know what it's about, but we're going to take a very exciting quiz. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Chipotle. For 22 years, Chipotle has been committed to changing the norms of fast food by sourcing and serving real quality ingredients cooked with classic cooking techniques. But real food comes with real challenges. So when it comes to safety, rather than follow the norm, Chipotle's changing it, again, by adopting unprecedented new safety standards designed to put them well beyond current fast food norms. Because they believe when it comes to food, higher norms should be the norm.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. As you know, it's Evergreen Week with our Evergreen pal, Trey Graham, in the fourth chair. But what we have first is our buddy Glenn Weldon, who's going to take it away with a quiz. All right, take it away.
In honor of the prodigal's return, this quiz is called Don't Call It a Comeback.
Oh, nice.
I will describe a plot element from some piece of popular culture whose title makes some kind of reference to a return of some kind. Could be the word return, could be some other kind of way of getting to the idea of somebody coming back.
Dang, okay.
Someone or something coming back. I am taking this excerpt of this plot description from Wikipedia. And it could be a sentence, could be a little bit longer. We'll see. So for 3 points, name it.
Oh, man.
For 1 point, you can ask for a hint, and I will give you the year that this thing was made. So we are really swiping the format of Extra Hot Great.
I was just going to say.
Big old way, and I am not ashamed of that.
Lovely show, Extra Hot Great, with their game time segment. We are sort of swapping their format.
If something isn't broken, I'm going to steal it. So, however, a flock of penguins living in an abandoned zoo's Arctic exhibit connected to the sewers rescue and raise him.
Oh, man.
Do you need a hint?
All right. Well, I'm clearly not going to get the 3 points, so give me a one.
The year was 1992.
Man, I am not going to actually know things, man.
All right. The answer is Batman Returns.
For Pete's sake. Good Lord.
Trey
Graham? 1992 and everything.
Yes.
After he survives his battle with a rancor, he is sentenced to death by being fed to the Sarlacc.
Oh, it's Return of the Jedi.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
Return
it
of the
is.
Jedi for 3 points.
It is Return of the Jedi. Well done.
Linda. Tina, Spider, and Scuzz make it out of the mortuary. Chuck and Casey return to the warehouse, and Trash is surrounded and killed.
Oh, I know this. First, I wanted to say it was Electric Boogaloo, and then I wanted to say it was Ninja Turtles, but I don't think it's either one of those things.
You need the year?
Give me the year.
1985.
Nope, I don't know.
Return of the Living Dead.
Oh,
Mortuary was
yeah,
the
it was. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Stephen.
Yes.
Marie is a young college student who rents a spare room from the Delaneys. One day she brings home a young man, Turk, who is star of the track team. He's wearing his track outfit, which shows off his muscles, and she intends to use him as a figure model for a poster she's doing for a major athletic competition being held in the town. Mrs. Delaney encourages the couple in their modeling session, though Doc, who walks in to find Turk underdressed, thinks it borders on pornography.
I don't think a year is going to help me. Can you ask about the Sarlacc again? I'm going to have to ask for the year.
1952.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're not going to get it.
Nope.
Come back, Little Sheba. All right. Trey Graham.
And now Trey Graham, it's Marty McFly.
Right. Her aunt and uncle take her to Dr. Worley, known for his electrotherapy treatments, and leave her under the care of Nurse Wilson.
No, I got nothing. Sorry. What year?
85.
Nope, still nothing.
Return to Oz, a terrifying, deeply upsetting film.
It was not going to happen.
Gotcha.
All right, Linda.
Yes.
Really, it's going to be easier. We're just tearing through this.
I'm going to get one someday.
Yeah, okay. Rick retrieves Alex while Ardeth Bay kills Loch Nah. They escape the Pygmies.
It's not going to be this one.
Nope.
They escape the Pygmies, who kill the cult, except for Baltus.
This is word salad. I have no idea. No year would help me. I have give up.
2001? Huh? Nothing?
Come on.
The Mummy Returns.
Oh, yeah. No.
Okay, you're sensing a theme now, people?
Yeah.
Joe learns that his leukemia has returned, but he knows it will be cured again as soon as he and Alma leave Earth.
Give me the year.
1988.
I'm lost.
Cocoon.
The Return.
Oh,
dang it.
Lord.
All right. Trey Graham.
Getting the feeling this is too hard, Glenn,
hold on. Some of them are easier. Except for the one very easy one you gave Trey.
Which he almost flubbed.
Ultimately, after making up for their fight, Richard and Lily discover natural love and passion, which deepens their emotional bond. They consummate their newfound feelings for each other for the next several months.
I think I know it.
Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Return to the Blue Lagoon, exactly.
Oh, my God, that was right. Trey's are so much easier than everyone else. Return to the Blue Lagoon, I agree with the Mummy Return.
Really hung up on natural love there.
Yeah, natural love.
Don't we all?
Consummate their feelings for several months.
Good hell, jeez.
Who's it sting?
Kids, I was going to say, that's going to chafe.
You're going to dehydrate. Okay. Linda, at this point, Wild Eve reappears. He has unexpectedly inherited a large sum of money and is now in a better position to fulfill Eustacia's hopes. He comes calling on the Yowbrights in the middle of one hot August day, and although Klim is at home, he has fallen fast asleep on the hearth after a grueling session of gorse cutting.
Gorse cutting.
Return to Pride and Prejudice.
No. Do you want the year?
Sure. Why not?
1878.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Return to Pride and Prejudice.
The Return of the Native.
All right.
Return of the Native.
That's fine.
All right, Stephen.
Yeah?
The six men discover that the missing villagers are being used as slave labor to rebuild a desert village and church as a memorial to the dead sons of wealthy rancher Lorca.
Just, it's got the word return in it, probably. That doesn't help. I know that. Give it to me again.
1966.
I got nothing.
Return of the Seven, the sequel to The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, okay.
Yes, okay, score break.
6-0-0.
Yeah, 6-0-0.
It's 6-0-0, yes.
Yeah, Trey's got six.
Trey Graham. Among the other secrets and revelations, Mona announces that she almost died from asthma. She claims she was an extra in Giant. As the reunion winds down, it appears that Joe/Joanne was the father of Mona's never-seen 20-year-old son, who has stolen Joanne's Porsche.
Return of Who's the Boss? Return of the Boss.
Nope.
Revenge of the Boss.
Who's the Boss 2, Return of the Boss.
Come back to the five and dime, Jimmy Dean.
That is exactly it. Six. That's amazing.
This is like a soccer game.
I didn't know this.
Which Trey has nine.
All right. I was a little shaky on that one until we got to the Porsche.
Okay. Wow. Linda Holmes. I'm sorry, Linda Holmes. The Division's sloppy precautions have led to the release of an ancient curse and the awakening of hordes of undead creatures, this time including Saxon knights. The majority of the SS finally realize the dangers and seal off the entrance into the catacombs, leaving many soldiers trapped inside.
Return of the Zombie Nazis.
That's, well, I mean, it's a distinction without a difference. It's actually Return to Castle Wolfenstein, the video game.
Yeah, that was my other. Oh, the video game. Yeah, this was my other.
Linda is actually getting even harder ones than I'm getting. I should have gotten Batman Returns.
That's okay. I'm brave.
All right.
For some reason.
Steven, she finds Batman at the city dump where he fights an army of mutants.
Return of Who's the Boss.
That would be awesome. Need the year?
Yeah.
1985,
Batman. I am terrible at everything. I don't know.
Batman, The Dark Knight Returns.
I was...
All right. Trey Graham. Now, old Mr. Johnson had troubles of his own.
Return of Old Yeller.
Mm-hmm.
No, tell me the year.
1893.
Uh-huh.
Our American Cousin Returns.
That's good.
Glenn looked at Linda and me like, either of you? I don't know anything before Cool as Ice. Cool as Ice.
A little ditty known as The Cat Came Back. No?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yes. No, I do know that song.
Okay.
People, an old black cat wouldn't go away.
People listening at home. So, is this quiz easy?
This might be a mercy killing. Okay, so Linda Holmes.
The very next day.
Linda Holmes,
I believe
in you. I believe in you. Okay.
Thought he was a goner, uh-huh. But the cat came back.
Yep. After several months of dating, Grace finally decides to tell Bob about her transplant. I believe in you.
Return to me.
There we go.
Wow. Yes. All you gotta do is give me a terrible romantic comedy. That is Minnie Driver and David Duchovny in Return to Me.
Wow.
Okay. Da, 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 da. Now I'm gonna come back. This is the beginning of my comeback.
Steven.
I wish you could all see how Glenn is feeling.
I this is going to be easier. Richard arrives in a seaplane to rescue Lois and Jason from the sinking yacht.
I don't know, man.
2005? Would you know it if I said 2005? Lois?
Lois.
Oh, you can't do that!
I know, I can't do it.
So it's Superman Returns.
I know.
Yeah, but you gave it away.
Whatever.
Sorry. It was struggling. I could see in his eyes. It was struggling.
I gave up like 21 questions
ago. This whole courtroom's out of order.
All right. Last three questions, everybody.
Uh-huh.
As their evil nature becomes clear, Trey Graham, the anthropologist is joined by a Nazi hunter who helps him save his son, and at the climax, the master vampire is impaled on the American flag instead of the traditional stake.
I don't know what this is, but I am dying to watch it now. Return to the Valley of the Dead. I have no clue.
1987, does that help?
Nope.
Return to Salem's Lot.
You thought that was going to be easier? You thought somebody was going to summon Return of Salem's Lot.
Yes, it's a people know it. People, yeah. Meaning me, I suppose. Okay, Linda Holmes. Released by Motown, this album is an eclectic gathering of R&B music with backing musicians, including Booker T. Jones, the Pointer Sisters, and the Temptations.
I should know this.
1987.
Oh, it's going to be like Motor City Returns or something like that.
It is going to be called, a little album called, The Return of Bruno.
Oh, Bruce, oh my God.
Yeah.
Sugar Shack. I should have gotten that one. Okay. I am one of the few people in the world who should have gotten that. I was a Bruce Willis person at that time. Holy
All right,
moly.
Steven.
I'm glad you said I was a Bruce Willis person. I'm like, we should probably clarify whose album that is.
Yes, exactly. It's Bruce Willis, The Return of Bruno. Respect yourself.
Uh-huh.
Steven Thompson. Ironically enough.
Steven Thompson, though you are mathematically eliminated.
Aren't we all?
This is the final question.
Thank you.
Of this quiz, which I had assumed was going to be much easier than it turned out to be. A moment later, the Libyans arrive and kill him.
Oh, Back to the Future.
Back to the Future,
yes!
Exactly.
I actually tipped this one off.
Mine were harder than anyone's.
All right, Trey Graham, you are...
Just goes to show you what a little rest and... salt air will do for you.
Well, I appreciate that quiz, Glenn. I know that
Glenn.
You feel like it was terrible, but I have been the person giving quizzes, so I'm happy to know that everyone else has the same problems I do knowing how hard questions are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my questions, as I said, are generally multiple choice,
yeah,
which is cool. It's fine. All right. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour comes from LearnVest. LearnVest is an online financial advice company focused on empowering people nationwide to make smart decisions with their money. If you want to know how aggressively to pay down your student loans, LearnVest can help with that. If you want to know how much you should put aside for saving or contribute to your retirement account, yep, they're on it. They'll create a custom financial plan. Plus, they pair you with a financial planner to help keep you on track. To see a sample plan and get a $50 credit, go to learnvest.com/happy.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
I finally got around to taking my kids to the movies and seeing Zootopia, a little movie. We actually talked about its trailer a couple months ago, and I didn't think anything of it when it was coming out, but it got these amazing reviews, almost universally positive. And so I convinced the kids, you know, my daughter who's 12 wants to see nothing but anime and splatter, but I managed to convince her to see the movie for kids. It is wonderful. And it starts out and it's got all these very, very, very familiar animation beats. A plucky dreamer who wants to be special. You know, if she believes in herself enough, can she achieve what she wants? And you're just thinking, okay, this is cute, but rote. And there's a scene very, very early on in which she says, and she's a little bunny, voiced by Jennifer Goodwin. And she says, "You probably didn't know, but a bunny can call another bunny cute. But when other animals do it, that's a little..." And you realize that this movie is going a tiny bit deeper with its messaging than many movies of its kind. It spins this larger mystery. It's a city made up entirely all the anthropomorphized animals who coexist largely peacefully. But there's this whole thing where you have animals who are traditionally predators and animals who are traditionally prey. And there's all this really interesting messaging and metaphors about diversity and stereotyping. Some of its messaging is a little blunter than others. You know, it's interesting. You have these animated movies and they have some jokes that like only the adults laugh at. This had bits where only the adults went, and that's pretty cool in a PG-rated animated movie, Zootopia. I highly, highly recommend it. And I noticed one of the directors, the DNA behind this movie, Rich Moore, who directed Wreck-It Ralph and worked on the like the golden age of The Simpsons, is one of the directors. Byron Howard, who worked on Tangled. There's some Big Hero 6 DNA in there of the people who made this movie. It lives up to those comparisons.
So it's got layers is what you're saying.
It's got layers is what I'm saying. And cute bunnies.
Yes, and our buddy Gene Demby also wrote a piece on Code Switch about some of the racial politics that are involved in this movie, and I think he saw as like limited in some ways and interesting in other ways, and so I would recommend that piece as well.
Yeah, it's interesting and fun.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Brendan McLean is an Australian pop singer-songwriter. I've talked about him on this show before. He had a great song in 2013 called Stupid. Last year he had a song that I liked a lot called Tectonic. This is his latest. We want hard, not drugs. And text all of our exes. That's when the song really got to me right there. And it has hand claps. Any song with hand claps is a good song. It's a great song. It's got a great bridge that I couldn't excerpt here because it contains a word that is not ready for NPR's air.
Right.
But it just gets you through anything you need to do at the gym especially. It's a great song. This video is really great too. I highly recommend it. It's basically a queer hotel room party. But in writing about the video, he said, you know, you can have gay storylines with nobody dying of AIDS or having sex. Gay people can just be friends. This is kind of what this video is about. And it's so much fun. So that is Hugs, Not Drugs, parentheses, or both, close parentheses.
Yeah, I enjoyed the couple of decades of time travel that I felt in listening to the way that song is produced as well. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Well, aside from the opportunity to be in a room with you guys again and microphones, that's cool. It is an amazing season for New York theater right now. If you guys did not see about a month ago the Jesse Green article, 28 Reasons That New York Theater Is Improbably Thriving. I highly recommend that to you.
Where do we find this article?
It's in New York Magazine, where he is a regular critic and profile writer.
Mm-hmm.
He's, by the way, Jesse Green is one of the very finest writers about the American theater working today. He's just splendid, always super smart, gets answers out of people that you never expect them to even approach that topic. So I cannot say nice enough things about him. There's a huge profile of Audra McDonald in connection with the show Shuffle Along that she's getting ready to open in New York, which is itself this fascinating artifact excavated from Black Broadway's history and rethought for a contemporary audience, exploded and interrogated in a whole different way. And then there's all this other stuff that's going on, not just things like Hamilton, which you guys saw, which I was very excited about and which I'm seeing in 2 weeks, which I'm even more excited about.
Good courtesy, for you, buddy.
Courtesy, I should say, of Sandra Russell, who is an NPR colleague and one of the very first fans of Pop Culture Happy
Hour.
She
sure was.
And she gave me a spare set of tickets that she had.
Just some Hamilton tickets.
So thank you. Thank you, Sandra. So I'll be going to see Hamilton with a friend.
You got way better friends than me. No offense, Thompson.
But also, on Broadway right now, starring Lupita Nyong'o, is a play called Eclipsed, which is written by Danai Gurira, who's on The Walking Dead, and is a playwright and actor whose career I've been following since her very first thing, which was called In the Continuum. She's fiercely talented. The fact that this is the second play on Broadway in the last, 5 years after Lynn Nottage's Ruined, about the effect of war on African women, starring a Black female cast, written by a Black woman. It's just, I don't know what's going on in New York right now, but it's kind of amazing. Right? So this is making me happy.
That's such a wonderfully Trey answer. It makes me so happy. I'm glad you didn't come in here and just say, like, I saw a thing on TV.
I saw a thing.
You gave
spring.
Like a full-throated Trey Graham answer.
See, but I was going to pick a German art song and then figured you were going to do it. And so
true.
I had to.
Well, thank you very much, Trey.
Kathleen Battle is coming back to do a recital at the Met.
That too. All right. So making me happy this week. First, I want to mention that as we talked about last week and starting this week, we are releasing the show a day early for those of you who want to try out NPR One, which is our app. You just get a stream of awesome public radio stuff, and you can find our show in there and lots of other things in there. And for the month of April, you can get our show on Thursday instead of Friday. So some of you are listening to this right now on Thursday instead of Friday.
And having your minds blown.
And having your minds blown, and it's only Thursday.
You're going to not show up for work tomorrow.
That's right. You're going to be so confused as to what day it is. And also, for those of you who are listening to it on NPR One, at the end of our show, we're just going to have a little extra special treat for you. We're going to kick you over to something else we like. So that will happen at the end of this show, provided that you are listening to it on that Thursday special extra bonus day. If not, you know, it's just the regular show. But, you know, next week, a day early. So listen for it on Thursday. The first other thing making me happy this week is actually related to NPR One, because I was on a road trip. I went and spoke at a conference out at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, by the way. Hello, people of Bowling Green, Bowling Greeners, Bowlingers of the Green. They were very, very nice to me. I had a lovely time out there. And on my road trip on the way back, I spent several hours listening to NPR One. And I listened to all kinds of great stuff. I was a little out of touch with how good it is. They've been kind of building it up and making it more robust, and they've kind of changed the interface in some ways. And one of the things that I heard was a piece out of WAMU. They're mixing more national and local stuff. And one of the things that I heard that was related to the fact that NPR One knows that WAMU is my local station is from a project called Anacostia Unmapped, which is part of a larger project called Local Lore, which is co-created with AIR, which is like an audio producer collective sort of organization. And Anacostia Unmapped involves a bunch of radio producers going out into Anacostia, which is a neighborhood in D.C., and recording a bunch of stories. The story that I heard was an essay called The Lion and the Map by Kimon Freeman. And he talks in this essay about racism within cartography, and it is completely fascinating. And I don't think I would have kind of come across it in some other way. I was super happy to hear it. That is not a plug. Nobody told me to say that. That is legit what happened. I loved this piece, and I think you should listen to it. The other podcast thing that I want to mention is an episode of Reply All, one of the shows out of Gimlet that we like. An episode this past week called A Simple Question, in which PJ Vogt tries to figure out why in New York, Verizon won't tell you why they act like they want to install Fios, but then they don't put it in neighborhoods, which when it started, I thought, this is literally the most boring thing I've ever heard anybody propose to do a podcast about. It is so interesting because they go through sort of, is this because they only want to install in wealthy neighborhoods? Mm-hmm. Is this because of New York politics? And there's some very funny kind of rowdy stuff about New York City Council meetings and local politics. It is completely fascinating. And it is so fascinating that PJ actually gets to a point where he says that if he were a ghost, what he would do with his powers as a ghost is haunt Verizon to be able to spy on these meetings about Fios installation. And it was like, you know what? Journalists are crazy people, and this is the kind of thing that makes you realize it. If he was a ghost and he could go anywhere and be invisible, he would haunt business meetings at Verizon. It's very interesting. It's a really good story. I enjoyed it a lot. And that is the other thing that is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen and Glenn at GH Weldon. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker.
Hey, that's me.
That is you. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, R-E-E-D-Y. And you can follow our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to, or running to, or bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Trey. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.